Some more anecdotes of Srila Prabhupada dealing with his female disciples. Of course, there are many, 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 many. these are just a few. One important point to understand is that Srila Prabhupada dealt with his Western disciples in a manner that they could take to Krishna consciousness. If he had insisted on all these standards required in the beginning, then they wouldn't be able to take to it, especially as the cultural outlook in the West is so different. It's recorded that Ravi Shankar, the sitarist, had said to Srila Prabhupada that here in the West, the students, the disciples, when you're teaching them, they'll sit with their feet stretched out toward you, which is absolutely unthinkable, and you can't become a disciple if you have so much lack of culture. But Ravi Shankar said that in the West, you just have to tolerate this because they have no idea. So, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that the Western boys and girls, they're both going for preaching and is having good results. He said that you cannot change a society's culture overnight. So Srila Prabhupada said that this policy is having very good results. So that suggests that he did want to change the culture. He did speak of cultural conquest, but that Srila Prabhupada was also aware that not all these things can be introduced immediately. And here's a narration recorded in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. Speaking with Kaushalya and Srimati, these are two American young women disciples who had come with Srila Prabhupada and a group of devotees to India, and they were traveling around and having programs, and Srila Prabhupada was showing for the first time to the amazed Indian people that Westerners are taking up Krishna consciousness. So Kaushalya and Srimati were unmarried American girls, and Srila Prabhupada sent them to arrange a pandal program, a festival program in Jaipur. So Prabhupada praised them for having arranged the Jaipur Pandal program. "You girls are carrying on Lord Chaitanya's movement so nicely," he said. "Just see, even without husbands, you go on preaching." He said that the Western women were different from Indian women who simply stayed at home. Then Prabhupada discovered that his two women disciples had not actually done a thorough job. Although the Pandal program was to begin in 2 days, no one had arranged for the large tent to be erected. Prabhupada said it was not a woman's nature to do such organizational work. So Srila Prabhupada said, first of all, he praised them for doing the organizational work. And then when he found out that they hadn't done it very well, he said, "Actually, you're not meant for this." The women became morose to hear him. When they showed him the flyer they had printed advertising the festival, Prabhupada became angry. "It is not standard," he said. It did not say International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but only A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami and his foreign disciples. "What is this?" Prabhupada shouted. "What, Srila Prabhupada?" Kaushalya asked. "Foreign? Why do you say foreign? It must be American and European. That is what is attractive, that they are American and European. But you are just a woman. What can I expect?" The two women began to cry and left the room. Srila Prabhupada would regularly shout at his leaders, who are men, and those, the ones who are fit to be leaders could take it. One reason that women should not be leaders is that otherwise they become subjected to the harshness of leadership. I've discussed this also in the Women's Masters and Mothers seminar. And then at an airport in New York City in 1967, Srila Prabhupada is returning to India for the first time, surrounded by his fledgling American disciples. He's in the Air India lounge, and Prabhupada noted a mural of Indian women carrying large jars on their heads, and he called the name of a young girl who had recently gone with her husband, Hansa Dutta, to join the ISKCON Center in Montreal. Himavati, would you like to go to India and learn to carry this water pot like the Indian women? So from what I understand, that's what Srila Prabhupada envisaged. Just like at New Vrindavan, he said the women, they can look after the children and churn the milk into and make butter and like this. He wanted to create Vrindavan life, following the example of Vrindavan. And life in Vrindavan at that time, in the 1960s, was still largely unchanged in most of India. It was largely unchanged as it life had been, life was going on as it had been for centuries previously, right back to and beyond the time when Krishna was personally present on this planet. That Srila Prabhupada envisaged that his, maybe if not his immediate disciples in the West, but the next generation, they would take up this traditional culture much more authentically, is apparent from a conversation that Srila Prabhupada had the day after that famous TV interview in which the women reporter and the woman camera woman, I guess you would say, ran out in anger because Srila Prabhupada was saying to them that they're less intelligent and they're supposed to be married, they shouldn't be independent. He gave them the whole trip. So Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't after that, he thought that, oh, maybe we have to adjust more to the Western people. The very next day on a morning walk, he said, now our policy should be that at Dallas, where there is a Gurukul, we shall create first-class man, and we shall teach the girls two things. Oh. One thing is how to become chaste and faithful to their husband, and how to cook nicely. If these two qualifications they have, I'll take guarantee to get for them good husband. These two qualifications required. She must learn how to prepare first-class foodstuff, and she must learn how to become chaste and faithful to the husband. And that's still standard in India up to the present day. The best prasadam, or best Indian, people go to Indian restaurants, it's just nonsense. If you want really good food, then you go in Indian homes. The women are expert cooks. Well, the modern girls, they don't know how to do anything. Really. They don't know how to cook anything because they just go to school. And then they get a job and this and that, and they can't cook anything. As we read yesterday, Srila Prabhupada back there said, modern girls, they're all rubbish because they don't know how to cook, they don't know how to sew, they don't do anything that women are supposed to do. So, only these two qualifications required, then her life is successful. Ordinary education is sufficient, A, B, C, D. Srila Prabhupada wanted the daughters of his disciples to learn to read so they could read his books. And he actually emphasized that for the boys in the Gurukul also, that that's their main education. This is all nonsense, so big sound education, and later on become a prostitute. What is this education? Actually, it's not even later on, right in the college, right in the school. They're being used, and they think this is their freedom. How wonderful. To make them prostitute, it doesn't require education. Educate the girls how to become a faithful, chaste wife and how to cook nicely. Let them learn varieties of cooking. It's very difficult. These two qualifications, apart from Krishna consciousness, materially they should learn. There are many stories, Nala Damayanti, then Parvati, Sita, five chaste women in the history. They should read their life. They should learn about the chaste woman. The story of Nala and Damayanti forms quite a long passage in the Mahabharata. It's a love story. It's got nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. How Damayanti was married to Nala and they became separated for a long time and she remained chaste to him and eventually they were reunited. But it demonstrates the chastity of a woman. And there are others always. There's Sita, Parvati, and the others. Anasuya in Ramayana, there's a section where Anasuya gives instructions to Sita about the qualification of wives. So Srila Prabhupada said they should read these. Traditionally they would learn them by hearing and model their lives on that role and on the role of all the women they see around them. That's how culture is imparted. Now it's all changed by the demons. Okay, back to what Srila Prabhupada said. And by 15th, 16th year they should be married. That's actually quite late by Vedic understanding. But legally in most places you can't get married until 15, 16. In some states in America it's 14. The demons, they say that girls or anyone, they can't be married before 18 or whatever. In India it's 18, the legal marriage age for the whole country. But they think it's quite normal that girls of 13 or 14 can have children. That's accepted. And they'll even pay them for it. They're encouraging it. Unmarried girls, they can have children, but they're not allowed to marry. They promote sexuality through every medium possible, and then they wonder why they have problems of unmarried young girls, problems of rape and so many things. It's so stupid. Alpa buddhiyaha, they're described in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna as being stupid. By the 15th, 16th year they should be married, and if they are qualified, it will be not difficult to find out a nice husband. By qualified, Srila Prabhupada means a chaste and faithful, and they have that attitude and that they can cook nicely. Here the boys, they do not want to marry because they are not very much inclined to marry an unchaste wife, and that's very much a fact in the Western world. Increasingly, must be the same here in Germany also. Why do you want to get married? It's just such a headache. That's another reason also, quite possibly, for the increase in homosexuality. That's the theory. They know it, that I shall marry a girl, she is unchaste. This is psychology. Yeah, it's so many cases I know in India now where they get married and then the wife still maintains links with her boyfriend from before the marriage. And the man with his girlfriend or whatever. But that I've heard more often, that the girl still has a link with her boyfriend. So it doesn't make for a very good marriage, does it? This is psychology. If a woman is chaste, even though she is not very beautiful, she will be liked by the husband. So train them in that way. Very chaste, faithful wife, and knows how to cook very nicely. Other qualification, even if they haven't, that's all right. And Krishna consciousness is being trained up, then there will be no difficulty. And boy should be first class man, then our Gurukul will be successful. And the last, in this section, the last quote from Srila Prabhupada that I'm going to read is the classic from the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, Text 41, in which Srila Prabhupada states, although rape is not legally allowed, it is a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. What is the explanation of that? I don't know exactly. I don't seem to like it very much, but this whole thing might seem like it's condemnatory of Srila Prabhupada to say so many things like this, to bring this up, because so many things that Srila Prabhupada said are just considered abhorrent in terms of modern Western outlook. However, this is not just Srila Prabhupada's outlook. It is that of Shastra and of the whole Vedic culture and of much of the culture of the world outside the Vedic area. Of course, we learn from Srila Prabhupada that the whole world was the Vedic area, but still the core of that was in the land which we now call India. Actually, not just the land we now call India, that also includes the land we call now India, that was the core, but that also included Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal. That is Bharatavarsha, the Shastric. Well, in the broader term, it means the whole Earth planet, but particularly that area. That's the nine great rivers are in that area, including the Sindhu Nadi, which is now in Pakistan. And actually, East Bengal, Bangladesh, it's not so important traditionally. Now it is, and because it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited there. Anyway, let's get away from the transcendental geography. Why is this so? Why is this outlook? Because that's the best for human society. But in modern life, people don't believe that because they have a whole different understanding of what the purpose of human life is. In a religious society, it's understood that everything is subordinate to religion. In the Western world, many people never even think of the meaning of life, or in the modern world, because they're just like animals who are interested in sense gratification. The animals, they don't have any philosophy, they're just interested in sense gratification. And if you're just interested in sense gratification, what do you need any philosophy for? You just do it, as Nike says. So that this is the outlook of Shastra. I'll corroborate that statement. Maybe I'll just backtrack a bit. In my experience, that's the kind of attitude that Srila Prabhupada is expressing is common. It's just the norm among traditional people in India, among both men and women. The women will train their daughters to be chaste and faithful and so on. And it's different in different places and among different communities. As far as wife beating is concerned, that would go on among the lower caste people. The high class people, they don't do that. And among different communities also. In Bengal, although certainly women have a role, a very feminine role, but they're more free in many ways than women in Uttar Pradesh, where they're kept under control to a large extent. That may be also somewhat due, this it's possible due to the strong influence of Islam there. Of course, Islam has been very influential in Bengal also, but there are so many different cultural factors. The Islam in Bengal was always somewhat, it was never so extreme as in North India. Anyway, I shouldn't get too much into cultural, mundane cultural discussions. So, some quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, from the text. This is not from the purports now, this is from translations from the Sanskrit. Kapila Dev says, "The illusion and bondage that accrue to a man from attachment to any other object are not as complete as that resulting from association with a woman or with men who are too attached to women." And there's a whole section like this of which this is this verse is the crux of it all. But at the end of that section, Kapila Dev also says that a man becomes tied up in this material world by attachment to woman. But he says that whatever has been said about man being attached to woman, it's true also of woman being attached to a man. Although Shastra is generally meant for instruction, being instructed to men, who are then supposed to instruct their women. The boys go to Gurukul and they instruct their wives. What they learn after they get married, they're supposed to instruct their wives in the essence of what they learned in the Gurukul. So, from the 8th canto, Mohini Murti, Lord Vishnu in the form of a bewildering woman. Mohini means who causes bewilderment. Speaking to the demons, she said, "O demons, as monkeys, jackals, and dogs are unsteady in their sexual relationships and want newer and newer friends every day, women who live independently seek new friends daily. Friendship with such a woman is never permanent. This is the opinion of learned scholars." So that idea is there in the demoniac society. Women should be free and they can have one boyfriend after another, enjoy themselves this way, that way, and the other way. This is not at all auspicious for human society, nor for the women, because they never have a settled domestic life. Then Urvashi, again, a woman, one of the famous beautiful women of Shastra, she states, "You should know that the heart of a woman is like that of a fox. There is no use making friendship with women." And she continues to say, "Women as a class are merciless and cunning. They cannot tolerate even a slight offense. For their own pleasure, they can do anything irreligious, and therefore they do not fear killing even a faithful husband or brother." She continues, "Women are very easily seduced by men. Therefore, polluted women give up the friendship of a man who is their well-wisher, and they establish false friendship among fools. Indeed, they seek newer and newer friends, one after another." This particularly refers to the Pungschali, those particularly unchaste class of women. Shukadeva Goswami says, this is the description of autumn, in which instruction is given by comparing various features of the scenery, the natural scenery in Vrindavan during the autumn, giving analogies derived from that. So Shukadeva says, "Though the clouds are the well-wishing friends of all living beings, the lightning, fickle in its affinities, moved from one group of clouds to another." You get that? The clouds, they're compared to very good people because they give rain, which is very useful for everyone. But the lightning doesn't stay fixed with one cloud. It moves here and there. Like, he says, like Shukadeva Goswami says, the lightning moves like lusty women, unfaithful even to virtuous men. From the 11th canto, practically repeating what Kapiladeva says. Yeah, well, there's no news to read it. It's practically exactly the same verse. We find in the 11th and 12th, especially 11th and 12th cantos of Bhagavatam, that many verses which were included earlier are repeated, maybe with just a slight change. From Chanakya Pandit, who Srila Prabhupada said is not a transcendentalist, well, he's not a Vaishnav, but he gives valuable advice, worldly advice, and this Chanakya Niti, or moral instructions, like other compilations of moral instructions that are found in the Vedic culture, they're taken from various shastras. In other words, Chanakya didn't just make all this up, but he took these verses from various shastras. So, he says that an unchaste wife, a false friend, an insolent servant, and living with a poisonous serpent in the house are nothing but death. He says also, women eat double, have four times the shyness, six times the daring, or that can be sahasa, that can mean also insolence, and eight times the lust as compared to men. Untruthfulness, recklessness, guile, foolishness, avarice, uncleanliness, and cruelty are a woman's seven natural flaws. He also says, to render service to the husband, to be always favorably disposed toward the husband, to be equally well disposed toward the husband's relatives and friends, and to follow the vows of the husband, these are the four principles to be followed by women described as chaste. So when we speak about chastity of a woman, this is what it means, these four principles. To be favorably disposed toward the husband, and to his relatives and friends, to render service to the husband, and to follow the vows of the husband. From Manu Sanghita, Manu gives many directions in this regard, social directions. He states, to corrupt men is the nature of women, hence the wise do not indulge in their association. And in Vedic culture, then association between man and wife even is much restricted. And up until recently in India, among the higher classes, it was like that. The men wouldn't see their wives most of the day. Not that they're hanging around with them all the time. Very restricted. Man by nature is subject to lust and anger. Women are quite competent to lead even a wise man astray, what not to speak of a fool. A girl, a young woman, or even an old woman must not do anything independently, even in her own house. In this regard, just one anecdote that Trivik Ramaswamy related this, that at one time he related to Srila Prabhupada how his mother was an alcoholic, and Srila Prabhupada was surprised and said, oh, you couldn't control your mother? He expected that he would stop her from being an alcoholic. Women have no other sacrifice, vow, or fasting to perform other than unflinching devotion to a husband by which they become glorified in heaven. So again, those who are anti-sexist would say, what's all this devotion to the husband? They can't do their own independent religious activities. Well, that is their religious activity. I believe it's Vishnu Purana, it's stated about Vyasadeva, that some rishis went to see Vyasadeva to ask him, what is the best yuga, what is the best varna, and what is the best gender? Which it would seem that the answer with the best yoga should be Satya Yoga, the best Varna is Brahmana, and the best gender is male. But when they arrived at his ashram, he was bathing in the Ganga. And when you bathe, you go down three times and come up three times. That's the way to bathe in a river. So he went down once, he came up, and he said, Kali Yuga. He went down, he came up again without them asking him. Came up again, he said, Shudra. Then he went down and came up again and said, Woman. Why is that? Because, well, the Shudras and women, they don't have to follow so many difficult rules, this and that. They simply have to serve their master. And they get the same benefit. That he explained. And Kali Yuga is the best because Harenama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kaling Sabhajantyarya, Gunagya Sarabhagina, Yatra Sankirtana Neva, Sarva Swartho Bhilabhyate. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Kali Yuga is described that persons who are actually cognizant of or discriminating, they praise Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga, simply by Hari Sankirtan, one can achieve all the benefits that are achieved in other ages very easily. Now, here's another quote from Manu. This is really, really heavy. And I don't know if, I've never heard of any practice of what's about to be stated. There is, among mundane scholars, may or may not be true, the contention that Manu Sanghita is much interpolated. Bear that in mind, because this is a really heavy one. It states that. Whether or not this is interpolation or not, I don't know. But in this standard edition of Manu, that which was translated in the 19th century by George Buhla, I believe he's a German, translated into English, this verse appears. And the Sanskrit is there, so I checked the Sanskrit also, so the translation is accurate, more or less. It is as follows. If a woman, being proud of her beauty and relations, makes transgressions against her husband, that's understood to be adultery, the king must cause her to be devoured by dogs in a public place. All right, I'll go on to the next one. A wife, a son, and a slave can never have any property or money. Whatever they earn, I don't know if earn or goes to him to whom they belong. That's Manu. In other Dharma Shastras, the Stridhan, the wealth of women is mentioned, and it is a factor in many different castes in India today, that the mother gives, and the father, at the time of her marriage, they give her jewelry and so many things which remain her property, not exactly her husband's, which she can use in the case of, for instance, if her husband dies or if they're in an extremely difficult situation financially, and she also passes that on to her daughters like that. But according to Manu, they cannot have any property. Day and night, Manu, continuing with Manu. Day and night, men should never give any freedom to women. By engaging them in proper activities, they should keep them under their control. Then the very famous. The father protects her in infancy, the husband in youth, the sons in old age. A woman does not deserve independence. Women should be especially protected from the slightest corrupting influences, since an unprotected woman aggrieves two families, namely the one she came from and the one she is married into. Drinking, evil company, separation from the husband, idle rambling, that means wandering here and there, sleep at improper time, and residence at another's house, these are the six factors that spoil a woman. They do not care for beauty or youth. Women just long for sexual intercourse with men, whether they be beautiful or ugly. That was referring to the men. On account of the erotic fantasies in their minds at the mere sight of men, their innate fickleness of heart and inborn absence of affection, women, or even though well protected by their husbands, make transgressions against them. Thus, having known their nature as Prajapati, that means Brahma, created them, a man should try his best to protect his wife. A fondness for beds, cushions, and ornaments, lusty desires, anger, crookedness, and mischief, these are the qualities of women. The purificatory rites of women are without Vedic mantras, that is the decision of the Lord code, that's also for Shudras. And for this disqualification of mantralessness, women are said to be prone to falsehood. This is the conclusion. The proneness of women to infidelity has been largely sung in the Vedas and Nigamas in order to make fully known their true disposition. By committing transgressions against her husband, a woman becomes condemnable in this world, takes birth in the womb of a she-jackal in the next life, and is afflicted by very bad diseases. Only once can the partition of inheritance be done, only once can a girl be given in marriage, and only once can a thing be gifted. Even after having formally accepted a girl in marriage, if one finds out that she has inauspicious physical features, is diseased, is not a maiden anymore, not a virgin anymore, or was fraudulently given in marriage by hiding some defect, he must give her up. Then a woman is lost without a husband, Manu also said. Different things, it's recommended who to learn them from. Deceit should be learned from a woman, from women. The wife who fasts and observes religious vows without the permission of her husband shortens his life and goes to hell. A woman becomes holy by not by offering charity, by observing hundreds of fasts, or by going on pilgrimage, as by sipping water that has washed her husband's feet. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, you don't need the husband's permission to chant Hare Krishna. This refers to mundane religious activities. But I know there are several cases of, I know of women who don't want to take initiation because they've gone ahead in Krishna consciousness and they don't want to go ahead of their husband. They don't want to disturb the marriage in that way. Here's another quote from Manu. One's mother is worth 1,000 fathers. Little relief there for the women. And generally in India we see that also, that the men especially are particularly inclined toward their mother, as I discussed in Women in Masters or Mothers in some detail. Okay, a little more. And then I should be able to finish this series of quotes this evening. And then there should be time for questions and discussion also. So from Hitopadesh, which means beneficial instructions, or instructions meant for benefit. I'm just reading all of these to give the idea that this is, it's not just something that Prabhupada invented when he said all these things. What we're reading from Manu and Hitopadesh, they may not fully apply in the present age, or in our Krishna conscious movement, may or may not, for two reasons. One reason is because in Kali Yuga it's understood that people are very weak and they don't follow as much as possible. Therefore, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam. How much we should even aspire to introduce all these things, well, that's a matter of research and discussion. In general, as Prabhupada, he often stressed that Manu is the lawgiver for mankind. But at the same time, we should understand that, as Srila Prabhupada said, we can't institute everything in Varnashram as previously, as far as possible, Srila Prabhupada said. And another reason is that for devotees, for those who Sarvatmanaya sharanang sharanyang gato mukundam parihrityakartam. That verse begins, Devarshi putapta nirnang pitrinam nakinkaro nayam rani charajan sarvatmanaya sharanang sharanyang gato mukundam parihrityakartam. For one who has completely surrendered to Krishna, then the various duties, the debts which one has to the five kinds of debts, to the demigods, to the to the great sages, to one's family members, to all of human society, and even to other living beings, other animals and this and that. Those debts, one is no longer required to pay if one fully surrenders to Krishna. So in Krishna consciousness, all material considerations, as given in Shastra, may not be there. That's why there are different smritis or codes of behavior given for different people in different castes and areas of the country. And for the Vaishnavas, there are various smritis also. Hari Bhakti Vilas is the smriti for the Gauriya Vaishnavas. So it may or may not include various statements within the Dharma Shastras. And Dharma Shastras, there are also huge number of injunctions, not all of which are meant for, not at all, not all of which are meant for Vaishnavas. But then again, even though there are various injunctions in the various Dharma Shastras, or the Vedic law books, being compiled by different sages of different sampradayas and different times and places, but the general drift is the same of all of them. Certainly of the behavior of women, it's a standard thing everywhere. So from Hitopadesh, freedom, residence in the father's house after marriage, meeting people during festivities, living unrestrictedly in the vicinity of men, dwelling in a foreign country, association with women of loose character, constant violation of proper conduct, the old age of the husband, being jealous of him, his residence abroad, these are the causes that ruin a woman. There are some rather graphic things which I think it's not very fit to read here. So I'll leave that out. If you want, you can read it yourself. Uh-huh. How women remain chaste. If there's no suitable place, time, or anyone to propose to, women remain chaste. It is well known even to the demigods that women are always inconstant. Happy are those men by whom they are protected in spite of their nature. There is no one to whom women do not like, nor is there anyone to whom they love. They just seek a fresh man one after another, as the cows look for grass in a forest. Well, I believe this will be for women who are not trained in that, because otherwise there'd be no meaning to being trained in chastity. For those who are not trained, for those who have that, for those who are loose, then this refers to them. It is not due to shame or modesty, rectitude or shyness that a woman is chaste, but only due to the absence of a proposal. So long only a man follows the path of virtue, controls his senses, feels shame and clings to modesty, as long as the arrow-like glances cast by sportive ladies, it's funny language, which robs one's steadiness, do not fall on his heart. So in other words, men are told to cultivate brahmacharya, so that they cannot be victimized by lusty women. Natural defects of women, infidelity, rashness, deceit, envy, overgreedness, absence of good qualities and uncleanliness. So this may sound repetitive, but I'm just making the point by reading all this that all these things, they appear in various shastras. Neither by gifts, nor by honor, simplicity, service, punishment, nor shastric advice can women be controlled. They are hard to satisfy by any means. Having given up a husband who is the abode of merits, endowed with fame, amiable, versed in the erotic art, wealthy and youthful, that's definitely for the karmis, this one, because devotees don't learn the erotic arts. Having given up such a husband, wealthy and youthful husband, women quickly resort to another man, although devoid of character, good qualities, etc. A woman does not derive so much pleasure, although lying down on a beautiful bed entirely to her satisfaction, as she does in the company of a paramour, although lying on the grass. In comparison to men, women are twice hungrier, four times more intelligent, it says here, six times more perseverant, and eight times lustier. So, Hare Krishna. I'll continue this evening, Krishna willing. And I'll stop there now. And like I say, there should be time for discussion, questions and all this evening. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Prahlad Narasimha Deva ki jai. Hare Krishna.